From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Soma.
I'm from Berkeley.
Concord, Cali.
Tenderloin District.
La Mission.
Coming up, change may be coming to San Francisco's trash and recycling system.
San Francisco has had, you know, one company handling its garbage service and trash collection since 1932.
We dive into a discussion about Proposition A. Then we come up for some air and take another dive into a dumpster.
Now look at this salad. I mean, it's nothing wrong with this. It's probably more dirty for my gloves than anything.
One man's trash is another man's meal. And it can be a whole nother story when you're living on food stamps.
And I think for a lot of Americans on low food budget, there's sort of a trade-off between nutrients and calories.
The cycle of food and waste, that's today on Cross Currents. On June 5th, San Franciscans will be voting on many things, one of which has to do with their trash. That sound may be familiar to you and maybe even wakes you up on some days. The trash collector comes early and reliably every week. The trash never stops and neither do the trucks. Since the 1930s, the company Recology has been taking care of the city's trash and recycling with no competition. This year, proponents of Prop A want to change that and open up the city's trash collection and processing services to a competitive bidding process, where other, even out-of-state, companies would have the chance to bid for the job. Those against Prop A say, don't mess with success. As a matter of fact, that's their slogan, meaning the system's been working fine for decades under the current company Recology, so why change it? Reporter John Wildermuth at the San Francisco Chronicle has been following Prop A, so I asked him what arguments its proponents are making.
Their argument is that that Recology isn't paying the city enough, that they're not arguing that the company isn't doing a good job, but they're saying that every other contract in the city requires competitive bidding and that the garbage contract shouldn't be an exception. As for what, why now? Well, one of the things is last year, right now we carry all our landfill goes out to Altamont, which is run by another company out there. But that landfill is scheduled to be full and closed in about 2015. So last year, the one part of the contract that can be bid on is the transport. And the city Board of Supervisors went and they heard arguments and everything and gave the contract to Recology, which is going to be carrying this trash to their landfill, which is up in Yuba County, Wheatland, in a town in Yuba County. And a lot of people said that's terrible, and it's a long way to carry trash, and some of the people in Yuba County aren't too happy about it, but they got the contract. But it brought up the whole question of the garbage contract and the way the garbage system is run. And again, the argument from the opponents is that the city could do better. You know, they should be, that the city's garbage contract is something that's very valuable, and the city should make sure that they get absolutely the most they can out of it.
And is the number one argument against Prop A basically, if it's not broke, don't fix it?
Largely, if you look at the billboards, which are the main thing you're seeing in the campaigns, it says, don't mess with success. And what the Recology and their supporters say is that San Francisco's garbage collection runs well. We've been cited as one of the greenest cities in the state or in the nation. We do more recycling and more composting than just about any other city in the country. And we are moving more so than any other in the state to get what they call a zero waste city, where everything or almost everything in the waste cycle is recycled or composted, and very, very little has to go into the landfill, and we're moving in that direction. And it's gone fairly well. Yes, the cost of collection has gone up, and you now have the three bins in front of your house instead of the one, but they say again that San Francisco's costs are right in the middle of the Bay Area costs and other counties and other cities, and It's working well, so why change it, especially on an effort that would be very complicated, that could bring in more more companies. It could put
possibly out-of-state companies?
Certainly could. It could put more trucks. If you have one company that's collecting commercial waste and another one that's collecting residential waste, that could be more trucks on the street and everything like that. So they're saying, you don't have a problem with it. If you're not upset, why vote to change it?
Hmm.
The problem they've had in the past and the problem they have now, not Recology, but the problem opponents have had, is that people really aren't too upset about garbage collection. It's one of those things that they are happy if you never have to think about it. If somebody picks up, empties your trash can once a week and there's no hassles and they're not spilling it and spewing the garbage all over your front lawn, hey, that's fine. The costs, you know, they're not exorbitant or anything. You don't feel ripped off, and everybody knows it's a crummy job they wouldn't want to do, and they're happy that there is somebody who's willing to do it.
As a reporter who's been covering Prop A, what has most been interesting to you to follow?
Well, I think that the very idea that San Francisco has had, you know, one company handling its garbage service and trash collection since 1932, that's 80 years that they've had this and that they've been willing to put up with it, that the people are at least not unhappy with it, and that it's been done. It actually is working. Typically, you know, the unions are very happy because Recology is a very union company. It's employee-owned. It's the largest employee-owned company in the city. Many of the people working for the company live in San Francisco, and that it has long roots that go back to Sunset Scavengers, Golden Gate Disposals. People have known this company for their lives and everything like that, and they're pleased. And it's the idea of how hard it would be to just overset that and convince people, you know, that it's time for a change. Now, certainly if, you know, there's a huge disaster or something like that, or, you know, if there was a, you know, 3-week garbage strike or something like that, that could convince people. But, you know, talking to people, talking to companies, talking to it, everybody says, well, we're fine. You know, and if you want to make a change, people have to be angry. They have to say, we want to make a change now. And I'm just not hearing that anywhere. Interestingly, one of the things that people have told me is that there's Recology is out and they're knocking on doors and handing out literature, but it's many of the workers, the guys off the trucks and everything, that are coming by and saying, hi, you know, Mrs. So-and-so, I pick up your garbage in the morning and I just want to say that this is important and that it means something to people. These are guys they see, guys, you know, they hear the clattering of the cans at 6 in the morning and saying, my goodness, there's guys out there, you know, humping garbage at 6 in the morning.
Taking my trash. I think there's something about that as well.
And
I made this trash, this yucky stuff that I don't want to handle. And this person is doing it.
And, you know, they see this person, they say, well, that's fine. And, you know, he says this is
kind of thank you.
It's still a union town. And as the union people said, it's good jobs that pay well, that you can raise a family with. And that means something to people, too. So I think that it's kind of a perfect storm against Prop A. I mean, if you look at the list of supporters, it's a lot of, shall we call them, very strange bedfellows that don't agree on much. And that's going to make it very, very hard for Prop A to pass on June 5th.
We want to hear your take on Prop A. Do you think trash and recycling are fine as they are? Or would you like to open it up for competitive bidding? Do you care? Leave us a message on our feedback line, 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. When we throw away the trash, chances are we don't think too much about it afterwards. But nearly every night, some people await those bags of what you may consider garbage. The recession has forced many people to cut back on their food costs, so some have turned to so-called dumpster diving for their meals. Others, who call themselves freegans, choose to eat only free food, saying our society wastes far too much. In this story from our archives, reporter Callie Schanefelt profiles the people who are piecing together meals from what others leave behind.
One Wednesday night, just after 9 o'clock as Rainbow Grocery in San Francisco closed, I noticed a small group of people rummaging through the store's three dumpsters.
And then I looked at the time, I said, oh, they're closing now, let's go check the dumpster. And then we just unlocked the treasure trove over here.
I gotta admit, it's kind of like Christmas. It's
like fun.
Beside the contents of the three industrial-sized dumpsters, employees had placed boxes full of fruit, dozens of apples, pears, and lemons. About five people of various ages and races were rummaging through an enormous amount of food. I couldn't believe the amount of organic produce and food that the store had deemed unfit to sell. But I wasn't convinced that it was safe to eat. So I decided to go back the next night to learn the secret of dumpster diving.
What's the secret? Jump in the dumpster!
That's Felix. He's from Switzerland, but now lives down the street from Rainbow Grocery. He asked me not to use his real name.
For me, for instance, I go in the store and still buy stuff here. And I never thought that I'd come out here. And I would think I'd take food away from people who need it. Partially, I'm in the same position now. I need it too.
Felix was introduced to dumpster diving by people from the organization Food Not Bombs, who distribute free food to hungry people. He now comes here practically every night to fill his own belly.
You want any of this cheese?
Ramon Perez lives on a school bus. He shared his secrets and his spoils.
I'm a musician, and I was having a hard time making money busking in the BART station, and people just don't kick down these days like they used to.
Felix wears gloves and a headlamp to dive into the dumpster.
Now look at this salad. I mean, it's nothing wrong with this. You can really right away eat it. But do you wash this salad?
Sometimes, but
I don't.
What just came out was pretty safe until you...
Yeah, it's probably more dirty from my gloves than anything.
But I still wanted to know how to avoid getting sick from food that's thrown away.
Things have to be trimmed sometime here, but I live close, so I go home, juice it up, cut it up, and, you know, eat it.
Felix often shares the food he gets from the dumpster with his roommate or friends. He doesn't always tell them where he got it.
Some people feel like you're not a useful member of society if you do this, you know, and
they call you a bum.
Right.
At one point in the evening, Felix popped out of the dumpster with a beautiful bouquet of snapdragon flowers.
Wow!
See, even you! She goes, wow!
Those are beautiful!
I know!
Thank you.
Throughout the night, the store employees continue to toss more bags into the dumpster. Bags I used to think were full of garbage.
Actually, he's looking for the cheese bag. That comes out always the last. Sometimes you find nice cheeses in there. You have to trim them. Sometimes it's scary. It stinks like, you know, French cheeses. Sometimes you take too much. Let's say this salad, will I be able to eat it before it rots? But I always can go on my conscience, oh, I didn't buy it. Now I can throw it away.
At the end of the night, I left with my bouquet of snapdragons and a new appreciation for what many of us waste. In San Francisco, I'm Callie Schanefelt for Cross Currents.
What trends have you noticed around town since the recession? Post on our Facebook page. It's KALW News.
Hurry, hurry, and step right up. Hurry, hurry, and step right up.
And I'm a chance.
Word up.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. And now for some artery, cultural coverage that has only $1.20 to spend per meal. You may think that people who forage for food in supermarket back alleys have no other way of eating. But in reality, many of them are receiving government assistance in the form of food stamps, and it's just not enough. As the number of Americans receiving food stamps increases, it's now reached an all-time high of more than 21.5 million households, there's a debate over whether the system is working. Late last month, the U.S. Senate revealed a new version of the Farm Bill, which includes $4 billion in cuts to the food stamps program and nutrition services. That has many people concerned, like Susan Kuhn from the organization Food and Water Watch. Here's what she had to say last Tuesday in a public discussion at a Mission District restaurant.
We're not real happy at Food and Water Watch with the version of the Senate Farm Bill. It cuts $4 billion from the food stamp program and nutrition programs. That'll definitely directly affect here in San Francisco. So it's a grab bag of negatives and a slightly little bit of positives, but weak, weak, weak.
Last fall, over a dozen members of Congress took what's called the Food Stamp Challenge to see what it was like to live solely on a food stamp budget for a week. Bay Area Representatives Barbara Lee of Oakland and Jackie Speer of San Mateo both participated. Here's Congresswoman Barbara Lee, who had to live on $4.50 a day.
We face limited food choices, lacked access to fresh and healthy foods, and were repeatedly exposed to unhealthy and inadequate food choices that promote poor health and obesity and hypertension.
So what is it like to be on food stamps, and can you have a healthy diet while on them? Shira and Yoav Potash wondered the same and took action. Shira Potash is a certified nutrition educator, and her husband, Yoav, is a documentary filmmaker. They joined forces to produce the film Food Stamped, in which they personally take the food stamp challenge, documenting every step.
So I'm looking at the rice bowl.
I don't see any vegetables. Do you ever eat any vegetables?
Oh, I got an orange. After I eat my thing, I get an orange or an apple sometimes.
Okay, so that's fruit. What about vegetables?
Vegetables? Oh, they don't give out vegetables here, I think. I've never seen vegetables.
Shira and Yoav Potash joined me in studio to talk about their film Food Stamped. I asked them whether they were able to live healthy lives while on the Food Stamp Challenge.
So, yes, we were able to do it, but it took a lot of time. It took a lot of knowledge that I had. I had nutrition knowledge. I know how to plan meals. I know how to cook. A lot of people don't have that kind of knowledge base.
We have a car.
We
have
a car.
Access to a great grocery store with bulk foods and a great variety of also relatively affordable mm-hmm. produce.
We don't have children. Even though we were working full-time, we still had, you know, time, not the demands of having a family.
Right. So for an actual family on food stamps that might not have all of those or even any of those benefits or advantages that we had, imagine how much harder it is for them. And even for us, what we discovered was that, yes, we were doing a pretty good job of eating balanced meals and getting a lot of nutrients, but we were actually just ever so slightly falling short on the number of calories that we should be eating. And I think for a lot of Americans on a low food budget, there's sort of a trade-off between nutrients and calories. And most people, honestly, tend to get too many calories and not enough nutrients. They go that way, which is the natural way to go when you're surrounded by a kind of a junk food culture like we are in the United States.
And that's not just people who are on food stamps. That's kind of the general American
right.
public, and the American diet is overfed but now malnourished.
So what's your explanation of that, for this to be, you know, one of the richest countries in the world, yet so much of the population is malnourished? It's insane to me to even be able to say that word as descriptive of Americans.
Well, we've gotten so far away from where our food comes from. Most people, there's a statistic that most people don't know what they're having for dinner at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So we don't, you know, we're not cooking. We're spending more and more time working. We don't necessarily know how to cook. We're not farming, that's for sure. We're not growing our food. I think that the more that people cook and connect with their food and eat closer to home, so to speak, the healthier their diets tend to be.
What kind of responsibility do you think government has in trying to help somehow?
I think government has a large, can play a large role and is already playing a large role in making the system the way it is. The USDA has these contradictory policies in place where on the one hand, we are educating families and children about how to eat healthy.
And we're telling them to eat a certain amount of fruits and vegetables a
day. In fact, we're telling them to eat. If everybody in America ate as many fruits and vegetables a day as they're supposed to, we actually wouldn't have enough fruits and vegetables in this country for everyone to do so. And that's because our farm policies work completely at odds with our food education priorities. We give billions and billions of taxpayer dollars every year to the commodities crops, meaning corn, soy, wheat, and a handful of others that, for the most part, end up becoming junk food. So we're funneling billions of dollars towards the creation of junk food, therefore making junk food cheaper and more accessible to Americans. And meanwhile, we're telling Americans, eat more vegetables, eat more fruits.
I think the latest is the My Plate. I get these things from my daughters at school. We've gone from the food pyramid to My Plate, Mama. It's My Plate now, where your plate... She taught me this two weeks ago. You have your plate. Half of it has to be fruits and vegetables, a quarter protein, a quarter starch.
Right. Which I am a big fan of. I'm so happy that the USDA actually adopted that. I think that it's simple.
Why do you think it did that? Why did they go from the food pyramid to this?
The food pyramid didn't make sense. I mean, first they changed the food pyramid so that it had all these weird bars down it, and nobody could really understand like what that meant.
And like the grain area was really huge.
Right. Well, that's the old one. They had the old food pyramid that had the potatoes and starches at the bottom, and then they realized that that wasn't really how people should be eating. So then they changed the food pyramid to have these weird kind of long
slices
down it that didn't make any sense, and nobody really understood what it meant.
And the bottom line is when you sit down to eat, you don't usually sit down to eat a pyramid of food. You sit down to eat a plate or a bowl or some kind of serving of food. So the plate model makes more sense. You can actually picture it and you know, it obviously stuck with your daughter, and then she can come home and teach it to you, which is part of how food education works.
We haven't seen it so much in practice, though, even though it's great that the government is advocating for half of people's plates to be fruits and vegetables.
It's so much easier to remember.
Yes.
When you go to a school, perhaps your daughter's school and any elementary school in this country, and
that's
the
not
kids
what they're doing.
Go
right.
there, right. They get that free or reduced cost lunch. Is that really what they're being served, or is it really a corn dog and some fries, which it is at many, many schools all across this country? So those are all just examples of how the government is already playing a very large role in what America is eating. Unfortunately, maybe 4 out of 5 times, I think the government is currently kind of playing the wrong role. And what part of the solution I would suggest would be subsidizing the healthy foods or ending the subsidies of the junk foods or a mixture of both, and encouraging more local and state solutions where people can actually access the very foods that the government is recommending them to consume.
Shira and Yoav Potash are the filmmaking team behind the new documentary, Food Stamped. The film is screening tonight at 7 at the 9th Street Independent Film Center in San Francisco as part of the San Francisco Green Film Festival. There will be a Q&A with Yoav and Shira Potash after the show. And if you can't make it, we'll show you how to get the DVD at KALW.org.
As long.
been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Emily Gaddick, Nina Gensler-Debs, RTM's Konohovs, Erica Mu, Lisa Ratner, Seth Samuel, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City Car Share. They provide an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City Car Share is online at citycarshare.org. And thank you. We are listener-supported radio. Have you ever seen a cello player perform topless? No? Then you've never seen Tornado Rider, a powerful bird of a band that you need to see to fully appreciate. You'll have that opportunity on Friday when they play the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco. Doors open at 7:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.